Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Loadseaters, episode 1227 for Monday, the 11th of August, 2025. I'm your host, Luca, bookended today by the Beards, Bo and Lewis.
Brightpool.
Just complimenting one another's beard game before we came on. I felt very insecure, I have to say. but nonetheless, we're all going to be talking today about the hotel protests seem to just grow bigger and bigger every single week, and it's very, very encouraging. We're then going to talk about Labour's most recent scrap of red meat that's definitely going to calm everything right down. And then we're going to go through the NGOs who are steering UK's immigration policy. We're going to name them, aren't we?
We are going to name them
and infinitely shame them. All right. So, with that all said, let's begin the first segment. So, as you all know, starting several weeks ago now, things really heated up when that horrendous story came out about the alleged sexual assaults that were happening in Epping, of course. And ever since then, the people of Epping came out very, very well as a community, totally organically, grassroots, and just through their exemplary display, you know, have, I think, really inspired a lot of people around the country. Mm. Because, of course, there's really no place in the country now that isn't touched by the problem of these illegal hotels. Mm. They're everywhere. I mean, you know, obviously there's the large, as you always say, the larger problem of legal mass immigration. But it's these particular unknowns and people who just seem to be obviously criminal. Well, they are criminal because they're in illegally, right? But like, just every single day, there's a story about them doing something, some girl being put in harm's way, and on it goes. So the protests are growing, and the you know that things are getting all quite hot under the collar when the Guardian starts to worry. But before we talk about The Guardian and their worrying, I should tell you about something far better that you could be reading, which is, of course, Islander Magazine, the fourth issue that we've got out now. And Rory has done a wonderful job with all of the graphics inside, wonderful, wonderful displays, and some terrific essays to go with them. So if you're interested in reading them, you can go to the website. It's $14.99. Absolute bargain for the quality that you're getting, if I do say so myself. And you can also go and support us by buying things from the merch store, as well as t-shirts, mugs, all sorts of great things on the website.
Yeah, do get around it. It will sell out.
Mm. Yes,
it will sell out.
Once it's gone, it's gone. And when it goes, really well, if you haven't got it, you'll live with the shame forever. So get it now.
You'll have to go on eBay and pay like $200 a pop. Mm.
That's so cool, though, isn't it, right? Like, selling out completely and then having to go on eBay to, like, I don't know, scalping Lotus Eaters stuff. Like.
So, get it now. Anyway, let's talk about a far more disreputable outfit, compared to us, of course, which is The Guardian. And The Guardian are a little bit worried, because you could see in anxious of what was going to happen this weekend, police in England brace for disorder as far right that promotes the anti-migrant protests. Same old, they never change, do they? They go on to say that police are braced for potential disorder in towns across England this weekend amid the far right's promotion of a range of protests against asylum seekers, with anti-racist, pro-rape activists, is really what they are, planning counter-protests. Restrictions will be in place on Friday at locations including Norwich, while officers will police at least 12 other towns and cities that evening. There is particular concerns around a planned protest on Saturday at council offices in Nuneaton, where Warwickshire police have dismissed claims by a Reform UK council leader that the force held back information over the alleged rape of a 12-year-old girl. Right? So, again, stories like this all over the country. The chair of the National Police Chiefs Council Operations Coordination Committee, Chief Constable BJ Harrington, said, "We urge communities to carefully consider the information they read, share and trust from online sources. It is essential to remain aware of the potential motivation behind such content. I would consider it to be really, really angry about all the rape, actually, yeah. Mr. Harrington. Mm. I think that's where most of the concern comes from.
Mm. It's interesting that we do live in a world now, don't we, where wherever it should have always been the case, but it didn't used to be particularly. But yeah, you have to look at the source. Mm. I mean, being a history nerd, I've been sort of trained to do that right. since A-level, undergrad days anyway. Mm. Look at who's saying the thing and who they are, and then look at the thing, mm. or in tandem at least. So yeah, always do that. Mm. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, always, sure, fine.
But even if...
sort of saying for the mainstream media, or if it's The Guardian,
yes.
don't do that on...
Oh, yeah, never do that. Yeah. Never do that. Because they're never wrong.
If you're not getting your information direct from Mariana Spring, then you're not... You've got the wrong information.
Please tune into BBC Verify every single day for your latest updates.
The ultimate arbiter of truth, yes. Mariana Spring.
Who lied in her first story.
Yeah.
And everyone after that, I'm sure, as well. But... as we've pointed out, as Josh compiles here, just taking a story from consecutive days every single day for the past week, and there is a story of sexual assault or far worse behind each and every one of them, because we are swamped now with all of these illegal hotels. And frankly, in many, many cases, they are positioned in places that put children at risk. Such as the one in Epping, of course, with the school just being around the corner. Mm. And so the protests are growing. And you can see this graphic here where they talk about abolish the asylum system. And I'm particularly pleased with this. No masks, no alcohol, pure patriotism, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Just be responsible. We're winning. Just keep going.
That's a very good slogan, actually. That's right on the money. Mm. No masks, no alcohol, pure patriotism. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, and the anti-racist protesters took the no masks part personally because that seems to be the only way that they ever turn up, yeah. just in their masks. Yeah. But yeah, and as you can see here on the right as well, we have a number of different protests that are happening over the weekend. Now, I checked out the Wolverhampton one, and that didn't actually seem to have really materialised into anything. However, for the other parts, there is a lot going on here. Of course, the Epping protest continues, and they Epping Council wrote a letter to Yvette Cooper saying, "We support the Home Office's wider objective of reducing reliance on the hotels and are keen to work with you. However, we urge you to accelerate this process and to make the Bell Hotel in Epping a priority for urgent closure. It's vital that this location is reconsidered, considering the operational realities on the ground. We urge that the Bell Hotel be made a priority for urgent decommissioning. The public trust, our community's cohesion, and the operational integrity of Essex Police depend on it."
Huh. Mm. It's quite an admission.
It is.
It is quite.
The integrity of them.
Mm. Oh, so they're worried about that.
It could just
more
fall
than...
apart like tissue paper. Like, oh, we've got nothing.
Voss integrity. Yeah.
The thing is, to add quickly, there is obviously a big concern with the people protesting as well that once a hotel like this gets decommissioned, like you mentioned, where are the illegals going to go?
Yeah,
and are they just going to
disappear?
They go. They'll just be bused to another location. And I think that a lot of the protesters, from what I've seen in some clips, have been saying, well, this is not what we want as well. We don't just want... It's not just about this hotel. It's about the wider, broader scope. So I think that's important as well to mention.
Well, exactly. That's
in
what you're
in a way, it's even more, I don't know, like pernicious or something, to take a big group of like 30 or 100 or 200... of these illegal boat invaders, and they're all in one place, like Epping or something, and then there's a public outrage. So yeah, they just smear it across loads and loads of smaller villages somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Like, that's no good.
No, not at all.
That's almost worse. Yes.
And you see this with that groundbreaking deal that Starmer made with Macron. It's clear that as far as the actual government are concerned, their problem isn't with the people coming here. It's just with the fact that it's the illegality of the thing. If they all came by safe and legal routes, then we would happily... No, we want them gone. Right? We don't want them here. Mm. That's what it comes down to. Don't trust them, and they don't belong here. Right?
Well, we quite often, here at Lotus Eaters, are at pains to say, you know, we're perfectly aware that it's not just the illegals, it's not just the boat people. Mm. It's legal immigration, because, as you say, if a lot of these people had their way, people like Corbyn or whoever, or Sakir, they would just have safe and legal routes. Mm-hmm. So, but we would still have the exact same issue. You're still importing sex criminals into our country. So, yeah, it's not good enough. It's still not good enough.
No, not at all. Not at all. And so, as you can see here, we've got a protest still carrying on in Epping. All very wholesome. But now it's spreading as well. So now we've got protests happening in Norwich, right, as well. And it's going, you see there, only 15 stand up to racism clowns. So, but that's the point. They are always there, right? Even if it's just 15 of them, every town, there's some of them there, same placards. It's like, well, they all came to different towns. But they haven't brought their own homemade placards. No, they've all got the uniform placards from the NGOs, the charities funding them, which I'm sure we'll come into later. But yeah, it's really, really suspicious. But if you just look at the... sorry, supposed to be about there. The turnout is really impressive, where if the camera will pan away. There we go.
And these will all just be on, I would have thought, largely just at genuine local people.
Yes.
Yeah. Local people.
Local people from Norwich. Yes.
North Norfolk, so.
Mm. Right. Really, really impressive. And bear in mind as well that Norwich, as things stand currently, don't get me wrong, it's not been entirely shielded, but it's still a very British part of the country. Right. It's not quite Cornwall and Devon or Cumbria, but it's still pretty British. Right, yeah. And so they'll feel it really acutely.
East Anglia is one of the, I would say, one of the heartlands among, for sure.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's not had those huge waves of mass immigration yet, like the North, like London. Mm. It's still... Anyway, so, but then we get to what happened at Nuneaton. And I'm going to play this with volume, because it's a remarkable exchange.
Hello, mate. You right?
Yeah. What's up?
Absolutely nothing. So don't panic. It's just a very quick one. I appreciate you're at work, but Warwickshire have asked me to come round and just basically, it's a load of bollocks, mate. But it's about this protest tomorrow in Warwickshire.
Yeah.
And just saying, obviously, that they're aware that you might be wanting to attend that planned protest, and obviously that's absolutely fine. You've got a freedom of speech, and that's no issues at all. And all they've asked me to do, mate, it sounds dumb, so I apologise, and it's really woeful. It's not something I agree with, but I've been asked to do it. It's just to drop a leaflet about being involved in a protest. It sounds bad, but it is what it is.
Do me a favour. Take it back to them, and
yes, write
back on it to them, say, we will no longer be silent, and to fuck himself. From me, with love.
Fair enough.
With love.
Yeah, with love. Yeah.
Cheers,
the silent majority of Britain will no longer stay silent. Tell them that. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Simple as.
Nice.
Do you know,
nice.
Do you know, like,
nice.
I heard about this exchange, and I didn't watch the full video, but I didn't realise that the guy laughed and was like, I'm sorry to have to do this. Like, because clearly it's orders from the ups.
Yes.
And
you could tell this guy, this police officer here, is just totally embarrassed by the entire situation.
I've not seen that clip until then. But that's great. Yeah, he's that cop is obviously completely embarrassed.
Mm.
And yeah, took the guy said, laughed about it. It's great because in history, often the revolutions only really work when the Cossacks the police, the soldiers, when they're on board, when they're on side with the protesters, that's when regimes tumble and collapse. So it's very, I mean, this guy, that's just great to see.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah, phenomenal to witness. I mean, fair play to the policeman for treating it like the farce it is.
Yeah.
He's done his, he's obeyed his orders, but he's also shown that he's just obviously not aligned with this
nonsense. I hope he doesn't get in trouble.
No, I hope not.
No, I hope not.
I hope not too.
I was going to say, has there ever been anything like that where the police have actually been given orders to go round someone's house and to drop off a leaflet to say, just so you're out, I know you're going to a protest tomorrow to exercise your freedom of speech and expression.
Which you totally have the right to do.
You have the right to do, but we just want to make you aware, like, don't act a certain way, don't do this, don't do that. I've never heard of a case like that.
It's a bit odd, like the intimidation factor.
Yeah, it's like, don't worry, we're watching.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we're watching you. Big Brother's watching you. We're aware you might like to attend. Are you? What, so you're watching me then? Okay.
I'll just, actually, I'll just read this Rumble rant now because it's entirely relevant from Bone Apple Tea Party, who says that copper is now under investigation.
Oh, really?
Right.
If they fire him, let's get him on here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. But again, it's as exactly as you say, Lewis, just the absurdity of making someone go and do that. So, yeah, a fantastic turnout here in Nuneaton. It's just, and it's again, it's, but it's not just like how many cities and towns it's happening now. It's the size of the crowds it's drawing in.
Yeah.
It's genuinely impressive.
Organic, genuine organic.
And it's
protests.
Continuous.
Yeah.
It's relentless. It's every single weekend now. We're just really seeing something getting sparked up here.
There's no mass printable signs. It's all hand-drawn, you know, flags of our own country and the Union being flown. Like, genuine... I don't know, it's just... It's actually just so nice to see.
Like, it is great
that's
to see.
Peaceful.
And the argument that if you say something that's too based, as an actual political party, let's say, like Reform or something, there was an argument that Nigel and Tyson, whoever, they can't say things that are too based because that's electoral poison. And I've been saying for a long time, well, you get people on Twitter.
Oh,
saying,
right.
You know, reform loyalists. Or
it's not the Bode position, I can assure you.
Right. And I've argued for a long time, or since the beginning, that no, I don't believe that. I think there's millions and millions of people screaming out, crying out for a super based voice at the ballot box. And I'm sure that's true. If Nigel was as based as Rupert or even more, he wouldn't be at 35%. He'd be at 55%, 65%.
It's true. It is true.
Well, this is entirely, of course, what absolutely collapsed the Tories, wasn't it? The fact that they said they would do certain things and then either reneged on them or doubled down in the total opposite direction and exacerbated all of the problems. So the mandate to address these issues is even greater than what it was 10 years ago now. Even greater. And a greater mandate means that, you can be more hardline in your rhetoric. Definitely, because the times are more...
Even Labour are becoming hardline in some of their rhetoric. Obviously, it's just talk. I don't see any fulfilment of it. But even they are trying to position themselves to court... It's not going to work. Court reform voters or people of the right. And it's like, that's not going to work. But well done for destroying yourself.
Yeah. And it speaks of the Overton window...
Oh, it does.
...has moved. Or is in transit.
I like that. In transit. Very good.
It's always on the move these
Very
days,
good.
It seems. Aldershot, Great Escape theme. Love it.
Home of the British Army, isn't it, Aldershot?
Is it really? Oh, I'm not
sure. Yeah, you might be right there. Yeah.
Take your word. Yeah. Alan Miller, friend of the show, was on recently. He was in Bournemouth. Covering what was happening down in there. Bournemouth strikes again.
Right. So we're here, and there's another hotel just down there, and the third one is a bit further down.
I've seen you about three quarters of this event.
Obviously, some people are quite annoyed, so they're making their voices heard. That's all right.
The reason we're getting annoyed is because...
Anyway, in case...
just jumps in there.
Cheeky Jackie at the back. I'm sure there are perfectly, you know, sensible things to say.
Well, people are crying out to be heard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Crying out for it. They've been kept in that pressure cooker for years.
Yes, yeah.
Years and years. And demonised at the same time.
Alan does good work as well.
He does, definitely. Go follow him. But if you think that towards the end of this segment I'm going to come to you with some sort of response from the government, right, given that there have been protests in tens of towns and cities across Britain this weekend, no response.
No at all.
Total radio silence as far as I could tell. She is,
that too is very, very telling, isn't it? It's actually a bit sort of disquieting.
Well,
they've got nothing. I mean, that's good. It's nice. But really, that's their tactic. They sat around like a strategy. There's like strategy meetings, you can only imagine, in number 10 or at Checkers or wherever it is. And they're like, our only play here is radio silence. That's so weak.
Just ignore it.
That's every time super we speak, weak position.
Yeah. Every time we speak, we become less popular. It's like, well, you could do the opposite thing. You could clear it all up. You could pack them up. You could send them away. You could diffuse attention. But they don't even know how to contain the situation for their own sense of self-preservation.
Because they don't agree with it.
Well,
oh yeah,
they don't agree with it, and that's it's as simple as that. And they don't want to agree with it, and they don't want to. It's almost like we've all planted the flag in our position on this. All the protesters, everyone, you know, and others, and it's gravitating towards that position, but they are just so prideful and just set in their ways that they will not change. None of the Uni Party. They might say that they're going to do things, including the Tories will say, oh, we're against this. Well, I'm sorry, you had 14 years of doing that and you had the chance. You could have done so much. Roll back, repealed. The Tony Blair era could have been destroyed and just rebuilt with something better, but no. But we know why.
We know how they really feel. I mean, if you remember a few years ago, Emily Thornberry, do you remember that?
Oh,
there was like one white van man who dared have an England flag out.
She got upset, didn't she?
Worst day of her life.
And so that is how they really feel.
Yeah.
And people like Lisa Nandy or Sir Queer or whoever it is. Yeah, they hate the fact that natives turn up with St. George's flags and stand up for themselves and are beginning to voice their displeasure with being raped and replaced. They can't stand it. They do think we're the evil baddies in this thing.
Yeah.
And they really do.
Future belongs to them.
Yeah.
And no one else. But it doesn't belong there in Blackpool, as you can see. Blackpool pay no heed to the woke weirdo whose tweet it is, but protests in Blackpool as well. And even the commie capital of Bristol. So you know it's getting heavy when things are happening in Bristol, of all places. But of course, I just want to say as well, when I went to Bristol, it was a few years ago now, but Bristol seemed to me like a really genuinely beautiful city, right? There is a lot to love about Bristol. And like so many places, just totally being run into the ground and neglected by people who don't realise what a special city they've got there.
A lot of history.
Yes.
A lot of history.
In centuries past, Bristol was absolutely one of the preeminent cities of England, after London, of course. But for centuries, we think of it as just one other, even a second tier sort of city. Mm. Right, it's not on the level of Liverpool or Manchester or something. Mm. Steeped in history. And a lovely place. Mm. It used to be. And as you say, sort of the commie capital, something like, I don't know, Seattle or San Francisco, where it's lefties seem, for whatever reason, gravitate there, think it's theirs.
Yes.
And stuff. It's like, we'll see about that.
Their own
see
Chaz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
English Chaz. The supreme leader of Chaz in England is, of course, Carla Denyer, who I just want to say I think is the worst MP. Right? There are so many to choose from. Stella Creasy, Jess Phillips. But I just find her... Because you know what it is about Carla? It's the fact that a lot of them, you think you're just above your pay grade, right? You'd be better off in working as a secondary teacher, right? No, I wouldn't even trust her in that. Right? I wouldn't trust her to do anything, really.
She's like a parody. She's like a sketch.
Yes.
She's like someone on our side writing something that's supposed to be ironic. But that's her. That's who she really is.
She's the avatar of everything anti-civilizational that just happens. That's what she is. She's anti-civilizational. Everything she advocates for.
A living cliche.
Yeah. Is that, she says, far-right protesters expect to take place outside. Look, Carla, I'll save you some time. They hate the rape, okay? That's what all of this is about, right? And you cover it up, you make excuses for it, you obfuscate, and you're a bad person. Moving on. As you can see here as well, there's, we remember as well when we had Jack Hadfield in the office the other week, great lad, doing lots of on-the-ground work, reporting, and of course he spent a lot of time at the Britannia Hotel outside Canary Wharf. Seems they were the police there were taking a leaf from the Epping playbook of just
police protection to me. Now them allowing
escorting a load of the anti-racist activists over, preserving their, what was it they said, their right to freedom of assembly. So freedom of assembly must include a police escort. Because that's what happens, right? Whenever, like, Tommy has a rally in London, the police go out and give them a nice escort down so they can all assemble in the capital together. Obvious nonsense.
Here now.
Obvious nonsense. And, yeah, as you can see here, you've got locals, well, you know, good patriotic Brits singing Rule Britannia outside the Britannia Hotel. How fitting. Mm-hmm. How fitting. And so it just, it seems that there's no end in sight. It seems that there's genuine momentum, genuine inspiration in the air for just ordinary people at this point, right? They've really had enough. Don't get me wrong, there's still, it's still not quite radical enough for my taste, you know. You see a few interviews where they say, oh, we don't mind the legal immigration, you know, it's just like they hate, but they hate the procedure of what is the obvious injustice of what's been done with the illegal stuff. And I'm sure on the legal front, you know, the facts will bear themselves out in the future.
It's really great how peaceful it's been so far. I mean, there was on Saturday, as of every Saturday, there was like a pro-Gaza, pro-Palestine march through London. They had like over 500 people arrested on that one day. And we've had all sorts of protests all up and down the country, and like sent almost none, I believe. Almost none, sort of, no unrest. I haven't seen any clips, certainly, of, like, brawls breaking out and stuff. So, if we can keep this momentum going.
Definitely.
It's great stuff.
Definitely. As you see, and a very symbolic photo here, I think. A gorgeous photograph, in fact, of just England flag, Union flag, and the sunlight just breaking out beneath the tree, you know, from behind the trees. Very, very symbolic. Fantastic photograph.
Almost iconic, could be.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Stick it in the National Gallery.
In the family album.
Yes, one for the album. Anyway, so good work out there, Patriots. Keep going. All right, I'll read through some of the Rumble rants.
Chuck us an Islander so I can...
chuck you an Islander.
Chill it mid-segment in a minute.
You work on... yeah, okay, the cop has been suspended. A lot of people are saying this. It's terrible, terrible news. I suspected it might have been the case after, because that clip had already been played around quite a lot over the weekend, so if anything would have happened. But it's sad to see, especially when he did do his job, after all. Yeah, he did go and try give the leaflet. Not his fault, the chap at the door didn't want it. Habification says Carla looks and sounds like she's perpetually crying. This is also true. Thank you. Over to you, Bo.
All right, let's just get my document in place before I begin. Where are we here? Okay. One sec, dead air. Worst scene, dead air.
Mumble, right. Rhubarb,
right.
Rhubarb.
Let's start. All right, so it's been in the news cycle a bit recently, or in the last news cycle, the fresh bit of red meat that Labour are throwing out to try and pretend they're doing something on the immigration question, of course. The one small element of it to do with our prisons overflowing with thousands and thousands of foreign criminals, some terrible criminals. Once again, we know that illegal immigration is not the biggest problem. It's legal immigration.
Yep.
And that the few thousand foreign nationals in our prisons is actually really the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, it is still very important. And it is in a news cycle at the moment. So, yeah, here we can see the BBC. They get the Home Office and the government say, we're going to deport way more people. They made a new list of countries that they're going to put on it. India is one of them. So, like, the Indian Times cares about that. Of course they do.
I wonder why.
But it's in the... Sorry, what?
I wonder why.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they're tribal. Like, all peoples in the world... all peoples in the world.
You could deport those foreign Indian criminals back to India, and I'm sure no one in India would even notice.
Right, yeah.
Right? No one would notice.
It's only a few thousand, yeah.
Yeah.
Most peoples in the world, and for all time, have got an in-group preference.
Mm.
Right? It's not mad to have an in-group preference, for God's sakes. Okay, so there's the Mirror running with it. There's the Guardian running with it, of course. Was this the Sunday Times? And the government themselves talking about it. So if I go back to the BBC one, we'll have a quick look at what's actually being said. So they've said, and I don't believe any of this. That's the angle. That's the take in this piece. If anyone doesn't already know where we're going with this, is that it's just nonsense. It's like the Rwanda thing. Talk about how we're going to give France XYZ, give them money. Nothing ever happens. In fact, we're just flooded even more with more and more people daily, literally daily. Like over the weekends, like 400 plus people per day coming across the channel, ferried across by Border Force boats and the RNLI. So nothing's even slowing down, let alone stopping. And yet, out of the Home Office or the government, Mrs. Ed Ball saying, oh, we're doing stuff though. We're going to do stuff. Look, we've got this list of countries which we'll be able to deport foreign criminals straight back to. It was they say it's a list of 23 countries, and they've added 15. Well, now it's 23, but they've added 15 new more countries to it. We're talking Angola, Botswana, Brunei, Bulgaria, Guyana, Indonesia, Kenya, Latvia, Lebanon, Malaysia, Uganda, Zambia. So yeah, that's sort of what they're saying.
I wish that deporting people to Australia was as based as it sounds, right? I wish that was some old imperial tactic.
Oh, right.
Played over again.
Oh, yeah, like the 19th century deportation.
Yeah, just send them all to Australia.
You go to Australia and are never heard from again.
Yeah.
Just a dumping ground for criminals.
Says Yvette Cooper. Yeah. Finally getting a finger out.
I know Australians, and I can see why, really hate that when we say that or mention that. Oh, you're all descended from criminals. Well, not all.
No.
But it was a place to deport criminals for quite a long time. Anyway, I got a strong gene pool.
Good for you guys.
Strong gene pool. Can't deny that. They're saying things like, we'll be able to deport way more people and much more quickly.
Mm.
And, so there's a few quotes here. But with even this U-turn, only the Conservative Party is committed to deporting all foreign criminals. We don't believe you either. We don't believe you either.
Not sure about that one. Do you know, it's funny, I see this as a big win. I think I tweeted about this yesterday. I see this as a massive win. Like you said, I would see it as the last bit of red meat to throw out. They understand and they know how deeply unpopular they are, the Labour Party.
Mm.
And so this is their sort of death rattle of throwing out the red meat to try and court as many people and to cling on as many people as possible, because they know their party is collapsing. And I think they're going to collapse earlier than we think.
Yeah.
I predict that. I am very optimistic. I've become extremely optimistic rather than blackpilling. No blackpilling.
Mm.
So I actually see this as the death rattle of the Labour Party in itself. So I think I see this as a big win. I see this as rhetoric is changing. The Overton window is in transit, like you've just said. And they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Don't kid yourselves. They're not going to do it. But the rhetoric is there.
Mm.
And I see that as a positive, personally.
It's remarkable, isn't it, how you remember when, well, feels like a lifetime ago now, but after Brexit, when the Tories obviously, you know, it kept them afloat a little bit longer and we got all of the terrible things that that unleashed. But there was talk at the time, like, no one trusts the Labour Party because it was full of Europhiles. You know, people who wanted to take us, drag us back into the EU and everything. And there was genuinely talk about it's going to be generations, you know, before the Labour Party ever get into power again. Well, we all got sick of the Tories and every single betrayal they'd thrust at us quite quickly. And so it's remarkable that in a way, Labour would have been better off if they were no longer out of power now, because they could have just continued to whinge from the sidelines. But now that they've put themselves so thoroughly into the inherited mess of the Tories and continue to just govern by the exact same playbook, and even worse in some cases with how brazen they've been with all of the abortion stuff and other such things that no one asked for.
Lowering the franchise. Yeah,
they're going to get wiped out.
Yeah.
We have to remember, though, we have to remember we cannot extend the olive branch of inheritance, because they will use that. They'll say, well, this was inherited to us.
No, all this absolutely.
Mess, all this mess was because of the Tories. Well, you could argue that in some of it, but it's exacerbation. Mm. You can fix this country, I'm going to say. You can fix it. You can.
I agree with one of your points and slightly disagree with the other one.
One
of them was that this is good. Absolutely agree with you. The fact that they're forced, they're painted into a corner where they have to use this type of rhetoric. Brilliant. They've sort of got nowhere else to go. And I hope it is their sort of death rattle. The only bit I disagree with you, and I don't mean to blackpill.
No.
On Twitter, I'm sort of an arch... I'm an arch optimist. Like, no doomerism. I've written an article.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to be a doomer. But what I will say, I just think realistically, is that Starmer is the type of person, the type of politician that will cling on with his fingernails.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's a lawyer.
He's the type, I feel like, because obviously I don't know the man, but I do feel like he's the type of politician that will put up with a sort of crazy amount of civil unrest and just stay in number 10. That kind of old school socialist.
Okay.
Right. That's what I feel like. Where he won't be removed from power. You know, like certain maybe something like a football manager.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of pressure and they go. Or you remember when there was that Justin Welby. There was a little bit of pressure and he resigned. I feel like Starmer's not that type of man. I wish he was. I think there's a petition at the moment.
Yeah,
I saw. And it's got hundreds of thousands. Like
500,000.
500,000 or 600,000 already. I feel like Starmer's the type of politician that's like, really? Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah. There's nothing legally forcing me to resign or call an election, so I'm not going to.
To add to that, I think, because I agree with that, I don't think, I don't know if I said that I believe that Keir Starmer will resign himself. I don't think that will be the case. I think it will be some sort of revolt within the party itself.
Oh, right, okay.
That's how I view it. I think, because how many is it? Is it 40 to 60 have to, with the amount that they have to sign a no vote of confidence?
A vote of no confidence?
Yeah.
All right.
I think that is potential on the horizon, considering how everything's going. You've even got Diane Abbott. You know, people like that, you know, that have been diehard with the party for a long, long time are turning around saying, actually, and not to, you know, string it all on Diane Abbott, you know, of all people, say that she's going to be the one to hold the anti-Labour revolution within Westminster. I don't think that.
I mean, Labour have got so many MPs.
Yeah.
It's always the way in a parliament where one party's got such a massive majority that it's their own backbenchers that become the real opposition in a sense.
Yeah.
And Labour massively suffered from that. If you look at Blair in 97, it wasn't the case because he enjoyed such a unity within his party and his leadership was so unquestioned and his charisma and the tide of optimism and all that stuff. So Keir doesn't enjoy any of that. It may well come from the Labour Party.
I believe. Yeah, I agree with you, by the way. So we actually agree. I don't think Keir Starmer is gonna cling on to that part of power. He's an old Trotskyite, I believe.
Right.
So he's obviously going to cling on to that, and he's a lawyer. you know what they're like. So, so it's going to be one of those things. He will literally dig his heels in the sand whilst he's dragged away, you know, not physically, obviously, metaphorically.
From power.
Yeah.
But that's
and
what
it will
trots,
be from Labour, I believe.
That's what trots do. They almost feel like, that's the righteous and correct thing to do.
You have to do it till the bitter end.
That's what Leon Trotsky would have done.
Yeah.
So, right. So, okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
Right. No. So there's other countries where we've been sometimes able to deport people to Albania, Herzegovina. But the question is, one of the problems is, will they actually go back? So, for example, Pakistan. We've got lots of people we would like, criminals, actual Pakistani nationals or dual nationals that have done despicable crimes, sex crimes, the worst sorts of things, and then they're supposed to be deported after they've served their sentence, and Pakistan just say, nope, we're not having them. And so our governments have always been, oh, well, I guess that's the end of the story. They'll have to go back and live on the old street in Leeds or whatever.
No sanctions.
Near their victims that are still there or whatever. Awful. So it's all well and good, Home Office, Yvette Cooper. It's all well and good. Say, oh, we've got a list of countries and we're going to send them back. Well, but you don't know. But you don't. We don't believe you that you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. You're not doing that particularly. And they'll talk about things like, the number of deportations has gone up. Yeah, there's a little bit of an uptick from some sort of crazy all-time low.
Yeah.
That's like when they
say, because it couldn't go any higher.
It's such a crappy argument. It's like saying, oh, inflation's only at 3%. It was at 7%, so that's good, right? No. No, that's still terrible. It's still not good enough. Oh, look, here's Sakir himself. Very strong words. If you come to this country and commit a crime, you don't get to stay here, except you do. Because the government's weak as crap. You will face deportation at the earliest opportunity. No one believes you. What is that? Really?
Might be believe someone like Rupert, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We will send you packing.
We will send you packing, says the government. Yeah. The government.
Says, is it Mahmood? What's her name?
Yeah, Sabana.
Yeah, Mahmood. Yes. Yeah.
Sabana Mahmood, our Justice Secretary.
Yvette Cooper saying we're going to send them packing. Like, it just doesn't. It's just strange.
I'm going to play that, but there's no point playing that. Yeah, there she is.
Oh.
This woman's in charge of trying to keep us safe, really. The confidence in the people out there, if you're going to read the room, read the temperature. I mean, we, I'm sure, suffer from being in some sort of bubble because we're right-leaning. But it does seem to be, doesn't it? Because I try my best to avoid that sort of thing, right? It does seem that the general mood out there... Well, if you just look at how Reform, the milquetoast containment project that is Reform, how well they're doing, just that. The tiniest bit of slightly redder red meat is through the roof. So the real feeling, I suspect, the real, real feeling in the country is way more than that, way deeper than that. No one believes Sabana Mahmood is going to do the job. Nobody believes Yvette Cooper is going to save us.
And what's more, the whole coalition of people that Labour had any chance to keep a hold of are just going to go to Corbyn at the next general election as well. So they can't even just count on the left-wing voters anymore to be like, well, with the most left-wing party you have, oh, aren't times changing?
Yeah. I'm loving the your party thing. It will split the centre-left.
Just what we needed.
And the farther left. The Labour vote. They will split the Labour vote. Lovely. Lovely jubbly.
It's good.
Where and Nyad, you know, he sort of does sort of just about just sort of make the right noises sometimes. That all prisoners from overseas will be sent back. Yeah, thanks. That's the bare minimum. But
as if that's not the
thanks,
default
I'll take
position,
it.
Though.
Yeah, right. Just as if. I mean, that is what Yvette Cooper and the Home Office are saying, aren't they, really? That is what Robert Jenrick's saying. That's what, all apart from sort of the Greens and the Lib Dems and Muslim Independence or whatever. It's what they're nearly all saying. And you even get sort of the BBC or BBC adjacent type mainstream media organs sort of forced again, sort of painted into the corner of saying, oh, maybe this is what is required. Maybe they don't just completely demonise. Like the mainstream media isn't demonising Yvette Cooper in the last news cycle for daring to say we're going to increase the list of countries that we deport people to. Mm. They're just like, oh, this is happening now.
This is what's going on. Yeah.
So again, that Overton window, sort of always shifting. One of the other, I think, talking points is the idea of, okay, so a foreign national commits a crime. Mm-hmm. And they're convicted, they're caught and convicted of it here. Should it be the policy then that they're just immediately deported to their country of origin? Because that is sort of what the government is saying. Again, no one believes they'd actually do it. They're not going to actually do it, but that's the policy. They're saying they want to do that. I mean, is that good? There's a few different ways of looking at it. Because what you could do is you sentence them to their sentence here. They do their time here, obviously costs us money and fills up our jails, but then at least some justice has been served. Then at the as soon as their sentence is up, they're then deported, taken straight from the jail to the airport or the boat and sent home. Okay, so at least some justice has been served, but at our expense. Or you send them directly from being sentenced in court to the airport where they then go to their own country. I mean, I would rather that, because I want them out of the country as soon as humanly possible.
I'd rather
and I don't want it at our expense. But the problem is, they may well get to their country, Libya, Nigeria, Bangladesh, wherever it is, and that country say, yeah, you can go free. Yeah.
So that's why...
we don't recognise the UK courts and the sentence they gave.
That I think there must be some sort of coordination with embassies then. There must be some kind of... coordination. We have a foreign national here from X country. We have to now coordinate with the embassy of that country and to have like a department or something of in charge of foreign criminals or their own nationals for criminals that have committed crimes overseas. And then they go in and they obviously look over the case with the British and then come to a formal agreement. Like, we're going to send this person back, but also the punishment still stands with you. And I think that's the way to sort of tighten it, maybe.
Well, that would be nice. It's just a little bit...
Sounds utopian, doesn't it? I'm sorry.
It's like, just a little bit difficult.
I'm so hopeful.
And it relies on a trust the other government.
Yeah. It's true.
It is a little bit difficult because...
You have to add sanctions in if there's disagreement. It's going to be quite messy. There's going to be a lot of red tape.
I forgot to mention that, but by the Islander, do that, buy that, because that's good.
It's very good.
$14.99. I always sound so disingenuous. I'm not a salesman. Sorry, Rory. It is well good. Buy it.
It is well good.
It's well good, bruv.
Ream. Yes, man.
It's safe.
The Islander UK.
It's sweet as a cherry nut. Buy it.
Nice.
It's a bit difficult because, one, you have to get that government to agree to loads and loads of things.
Yeah.
Secondly, it could go one of two ways. One, they could say, well, the crime you committed in the UK...
is different to how we would interpret it. Yeah.
The crime you commit in our country, that's not even a crime, say.
Or
the UK sentenced you to 7 years for some sex crime. And for us, we're like, no, well done, if anything.
Then it should be we are sentencing this national to this minimum years, and if you, and then you have to agree to that, you have to force the hand, essentially. You have to agree to this sentence, but if you would like to addition...
I was going to say, it goes the other way. It could be, say they committed a really heinous crime.
Heinous, yeah.
And in their own country, Saudi Arabia, say, or Pakistan or something, the punishment for that is death or like 100 lashes in the public square or something like that. So it used to often be, well, it still is often, the argument here in Britain that we can't deport this person back to their country of origin because that country has got a terrible human rights record and this person will be tortured or executed and we can't possibly have that, so they have to live the rest of their life in Leeds, Birmingham.
Yeah,
or whatever.
It's
that argument, you hear that argument a bit less. I have noticed. Again, in this news cycle, where Yvette Cooper's talking about increasing the number of countries we're going to send people back to, I haven't seen a massive pushback from bleeding hearts and traitors, you know, like someone like Chakrabarty or something, saying, oh, you can't deport people back to these countries because they'll be tortured or put to death or something. I've seen a bit less of that because it just doesn't wash, I think, as much anymore. The average British natives, like, I don't care. They just can't be in Britain anymore.
I just don't know what happens like after. Like you said, like we're talking all this about policy, like, you know, is there an agreement with the other country? What would happen if they refuse? You know, all of this. These are all extremely important questions that need to be addressed. Mm. None of the media are going to do that.
No.
Nobody. Yeah. Nobody is going to do that.
Yeah.
And these are the most important questions because, like you said, someone who done a heinous crime, Axel Ruder Cabana, or like someone or whatever, I don't know, and just a crime like that, right? Deported, and then what happens? Where do they go? Like, is it, like you said, roam free, or is there an agreement? Like, and nobody's asked that. Nobody. I've not seen it anyway.
If you try and have that discussion, quite often they still try and shut you down, don't they?
But what's the point of announcing the policy then? And I'm trying to say this from someone who is trying to. It's near enough impossible, but trying to be like, okay, well, if I was in that position, like, how would you do it? Mm. Like, and trying to brainstorm with that. Mm. They've announced it. So now I want to know, well, what happens after? And no, nobody. Sorry, I'm repeating myself.
The fact we don't get it, the fact they don't talk about it in detail, does say, doesn't it? It does. It tells
us. It's just words.
That it's just red meat. It's just a bit of gaslighting. It's just one more step in that endless ladder of, we swear, guys, trust us, bro. We're doing stuff to make you safer, to try and help the demographic issue. But they're not going to do any of it. They're not going to do any of it.
To save our party, I mean our country.
Yeah right. Meanwhile, restore just a cavalcade of baseness. Meanwhile, Rupert and Harrison and Charlie and the likes are, it's just like an endless stream of super base stuff.
That is art.
I really want them to make an actual party I can vote for. Really, really want them to do that because at the moment it's still not an actual party, is it? But yeah, just being unapologetically based. Restore, and talking about legal immigration now, and going down the Douglas Carswell route of talking about stripping citizenship from people. Yeah, you're given a citizenship, well, we can take it away again. Or even that you were born here. Yeah, well, we'll have to look into that, actually. Yeah, that's not written in stone.
No, it absolutely isn't.
It's just reverse mass immigration. It's not like, no, we need a net zero migration.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, clutch the pearls, wring the hands. Net zero, we'll go for a net zero migration policy.
Very expressive.
We need mass re-migration to the tune of millions is what we need. And Restore sort of begins to talk about that sort of thing just explicitly. Start sending them back, basically. This is quite a based one. The collaborators,
yeah.
Basically the families of these rapists that may have been complicit in it, knew about it, were silent about it, covered for them, whatever. Mm. We need to think about deporting you as well.
Mm. One of the other things with things like this that Restore put out that I really like, personally, as a form of like psychological warfare, is where they'll say something along the lines of just all the foreigners who hate Britain have got to go. Don't say how many that is. It's just like however many is necessary, however many fit that label, you know.
I want my country back and I want it to be safe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't want to be flooded with fifth columnists.
Mm.
Yeah, someone like Gwaine Towler clutching his pearls. Oh, people that haven't been convicted of any crime, you're going to deport them? Yeah, we think about it, yeah. Yeah. Just abolish asylum.
Yeah.
Stop. Yeah, we don't need it. We're not obliged. Mm. Britain isn't some sort of overflow car park for the world's detritus.
Mm.
We're not obliged to give asylum to everyone in the world. That's that's madness. Oh yeah, look, so like the Labour government can say, oh, deportation's up. Yeah, from an insane low.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a bit of an uptick.
Mm.
Such disingenuous liars.
It's good data. It's good data. It's important.
Restore point it out. Everyone should join Restore, or at least follow them on there.
Yeah.
Mass remigration can save Britain. Clear them out. They need to be cleared out. Clear them out. Pakistani rapists should be behind bars in Pakistan.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the thing is as well, this is something that people can trust because it's obviously consistent. It's obviously coming from a point of principle. It's not, if Labour was sincere, this would have always been the position, right? But it wasn't. It's, oh, things are getting a little tough for us, so we'll just come to that really sensible position now that everyone has been screaming at us to come to for years. It's like, no, it's, yeah, we have been screaming for a long time.
I do actually believe, have faith in Restore and Rupert Lowe and some of the other people like Nick Tenconi or Britain First. A number of these parties and organisations they're not containment projects necessarily. Mm. I do have faith that if Rupert Lowe was magically a prime minister with a massive mandate or an autocrat of Britain or something, that he would do this.
Mm.
That I may be proven wrong on that with the future.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I
don't think so.
It's
you don't have faith, Rupert.
Sorry. No, I thought you were saying something else. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
No, yeah, carry on. Sorry.
Okay.
Ignore me.
I take your point though as well. And also the thing is that I think we all have to be mindful of is that because of the sheer scope of the betrayal, because of how much that the people of Britain have had to endure over the decades now, because, you know, the establishment has slid more and more away from the actual wishes of the people.
Mm.
It's created this whole atmosphere of distrust where we don't really trust anything. Mm. And everyone who comes up on the horizon, we have to question, rightly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are they sincere?
Yeah.
Are they
going to
burn us again?
Right.
Are they going to betray us again? But at the same time, we shan't be able to succeed if we don't find a way to trust.
It's true.
Right? We do need trust in order to win. But we have to be sure we're putting it in the right people.
Mm. Yeah. No, I agree with that. 45% of Britain, I suspect that even is low.
It's low.
I think there's the silent people that will go out to these...
Anonymous.
That came from shove.uk.
Right.
So you know it's
so the reality is much higher. Mm. If anyone's just listening to the audio, it's a graphic that says 45% of Britain supports reversing mass immigration.
Mm.
I suspect it's a lot higher.
It's a lot higher.
I swear if Nigel became truly based, it's actually saying stuff in the nativist interest, he would be polling at twice what he's polling. I'm convinced of that.
Negative.
Net negative immigration. Yes, please.
Yeah.
Lovely jubbly.
And just simply, we must put our own first. Yeah. Yeah. It's got to happen. Okay, so... I'll leave it there. I've run out of time.
All right. All right, perfect. I'll just go through some of the Rumble rants.
Sorry about that. I didn't know what was going on there. My brain just, like, went a bit weird, and I was like, I don't think. And then I was like, hang on a minute. No, what's going on? I was having my own moment.
Wait, don't know.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I do think... actually
based overload, like, you just
Connor Smugmug says, I bought my Islander 4 by Islander Chat, can I get my Islander 2 with it? I don't believe we're selling Islander 2 anymore, but if you were to email the Lotus Eaters email address, then I'm sure you could get that answered for you, Connor.
If he's already bought one and just hasn't received it, then apologies for that.
Yeah, I'm not, it's not entirely by Islander Chat. I'm not entirely sure what you're referring to, Connor. But yeah, if you email the Lotus Eaters email address, we'll get that straightened out for
you. One quick thing I'll say is that to anyone who's watching this that's had issues getting their Islander magazine, is that I always thought when we started this thing, I always thought one of like sort of the least of the headaches about it was putting the bloody physical thing in some sort of envelope and putting it in the mail. Surely that's not problematic. That's the most problematic and like complicated thing out of almost all of it.
Mm.
Like that's actually weirdly, weirdly complicated and difficult and doesn't go smoothly. Mm. And we've tried like two or three different things to iron that out. Oh, maybe the first time we did it, we didn't know what we was doing and we made a few errors. Okay, next time it will just be fine. No, there's then another issue. There's another problem. And anyway, so apologies to anyone that's still waiting for theirs, especially older copies. We'll try to do everything we can to get them to you. But it's weirdly, unless you've ever done a mass mailing, you just wouldn't know that's actually a complex thing.
Decline all around.
Anyway.
We've got Logan Pine saying, the Dark Lord trying to save his party, but his incompetent minions keep dropping the ball. Mm. Yeah, most likely. Well, I mean, obviously, Blair will want the Labour Party to survive. It's just, who's going to be there to keep the lights on at this rate? Mm. There's no, and that's the thing as well. There's a lot like with the Tories. There's no talent behind Starmer to come in and save anything for them.
No, no.
They're all Ms. Ed Balls is not going to become Prime Minister.
Who would it be if he just, yes, tomorrow. Lammy. If he tomorrow just disappeared.
Yeah.
Who would it be?
Lammy, Badenoch. Perfect. It's probably, what optics that would be.
If there was a leadership contest, I guess Yvette Cooper.
It would be Yvette,
It probably would, wouldn't it?
Or Angela.
Maybe Angela.
It would probably be Rayner.
I don't actually know who's got the biggest block within the party. Mm. But I would imagine it would be probably Yvette Cooper would be the next leader.
It'd probably be Yvette, yeah.
Scanline says, instead of using hotels, why don't we fill up their embassies with the people whilst we process them? Well, I mean, it'd be a lot of guesswork involved there, wouldn't they, given they've thrown up their ID and everything, and we've no idea who they are. But
quite often going in their embassy, it's like a big Georgian building somewhere in Knightsbridge.
Yeah.
That's even more luxurious than the hotel they're in if we put them there. But at least they would be off our soil, technically speaking.
Technically, yeah. Habsification says, anyone committing sex crimes should receive... Yes, okay, I'm not going to read that habsification, but I take the point.
Probably best.
thank you. Thank you for all the Fed posts.
It's the next one we can't read out either.
No. Yeah, okay, right. Fed posting aside, Samson's
this
laughing.
Samson laughing.
All right, Lewis, over to you.
Okay. if you'd like to go back, thank you very much. Okay. I just need a mouse as well.
Oh,
that's all right. I was going to use that.
Don't turn it.
The aircon controller.
Indeed. Right. This segment that we're about to do, I believe, is an incredibly important one. I've been investigating this for a couple of months. I've had stone walls, but I finally managed to receive some data from the Home Office, who have kindly given it after a bit of pressure. Which is great. I've already done a video on this a few days ago and I've uploaded it.
Was it freedom of information stuff you did?
It was, brilliant. Yes.
Cool, cool.
My favourite thing to do in my pastime, believe it or not. And I think I wanted to do this segment essentially again because I've already made a video on it, but I thought it was important to bring it to the Lotus Eaters for a wider audience as well because of how important it is. Obviously, what we're going to do... Obviously, I've been sent a list of data on the 14 NGOs and charities that have been formally engaged by the UK Home Office in influencing asylum accommodation policy between 2020 to 2024. Best behaviour on this one is all right. I'll say. I have to present this as fact. We have to go through it as fact. But I will be naming the CEOs and directors behind each of these companies that have been listed by the Home Office. So okay. I just say, before we go into it, Bo, would you like to do some shilling?
It's your turn.
You should buy Islander. I actually really, really love the magazine. I think it's fantastic. This is an outsider's perspective. I don't work here and I'm not being held...
He says while sat held, at the desk.
...held at hostage to do it. Don't worry. No, not at all.
Out of frame.
Yeah, just out of frame.
Okay.
No, you should go and get this. $14.99, is it?
It is.
Plus postage and packaging, which in America is a few more quid.
Obviously, I'm biased because obviously I come here a lot and do segments, but also I know Rory very well and he does a fantastic job with all the artwork and just arranging everything. I mean, that's cool. Like, all of it is just awesome. Some really, really cool people as well writing. So you should go and get it. So, okay, let's begin. So, like I said, in this investigation, I'm going to reveal the 14 NGOs and charities that were formally engaged by the UK Home Office through Freedom of Information. So many of these groups shape the direction of UK immigration policy behind closed doors with limited public scrutiny and, in some cases, taxpayer involvement. So here's the request that I've been given back. So we'll just go through it a bit. Thank you for your email on the 8th of July. We've included in Annex A. So your request has been handled. If you're dissatisfied, X, Y, and Z, as part of internal review, the department's handling of your request would be reassessed by staff who are not involved in providing you with this request. So I originally sent the request. They said, no, we can't give you that information. Sorry. And I asked for a list of NGOs or charities that have been formally engaged, etc., etc. For each organisation, please indicate the nature of engagement. For example, consultation, funding, delivery partner, MOU, and the years of involvement. And I'm not requesting any detailed correspondence or raw documents, just a structured list. Because you have to do it condensed, because that's the way that it forces a department's hand to give the information by law. And this is what they've given me in Annex B. So it's given me a list between 2020 to 2024 of every organisation and type of engagement. So it says, based on the information you provided, here is a structured list of non-governmental organisations and charities that were formally engaged by the Home Office in relation to asylum and accommodation, including the type. So I thought we could go through each particular organisation. I just want to, as well, disclaimer, I'm not accusing anyone of wrongdoing or anything like that. This is purely just based on facts that the Home Office has provided me. But I think it's important to look into these particular organisations. As Charlotte has said, in her opinion, she says, charities are the main drivers of open borders. She said, there's lots of them and it's very incestuous / self-perpetuating. Private and state funds are problems. Some charities end up indirectly receiving taxpayer funding, for example, being funded by taxpayer-funded charities. And she says it's a racket. So, yeah, I think it's important to bear that in mind as we go through. But like I said, an opinion. So the first one we have, if I just bring the mouse down to this document. Okay.
So, just taxpayers involuntary, unknowingly funding.
Potential. They don't list exactly which ones, but I'm sure that people like, of course, Charlotte have looked into these charities, other people. I only know a surface level, so I'm trying to get up to speed with it. So I don't know which ones yet, but I'm sure we can find out. But the first one in this, if I just go back. Oh, no.
Sorry, Tits.
That's all right. I'm going to go back to the FOI, if that's all right. With the list, so we're just up here.
Thanks, Samson.
Lovely. So the first one is called Micro Rainbow, and they're a support charity for asylum seekers that are LGBTQ+, and their consultation was via the NASF and SEG meetings. So what that means, I've got this written down here somewhere, but it's basically policy stakeholder meetings. So they'll have like a round table, essentially, and they'll have a representative there and they'll talk about the policy at hand. So in this particular instance, it's the asylum policy. So just to give you a background of what each of them are and what they do, essentially. So they specialise in supporting LGBTQI+ asylum seekers, and their founder, who his name is Sebastian Rocker, has been recognised internationally for, quote, inclusion work. And that's the next one here. There we go. Sorry about that. Yep. No, that's this guy, Sebastian Rocker. So obviously he's got a Wikipedia page there as well, which you can look into.
An Italian man.
An Italian man, yes.
Right.
Yes. The next one is the NACCOM, so No Accommodation Network. So once again, the same type of consultation. The CEO was Dave Smith as well. It's a UK-based coalition of grassroots groups working on housing issues for migrants with, quote, no recourse to public funds, allegedly. I believe he has stepped down as well, so I don't quite know who the next person will be or
recently.
Is. I believe it's quite recently. I believe there's an article as well on their website too. Mm. Another one is the British Red Cross, which, as we know, is a massive humanitarian charity and emergency response unit almost. I mean, it's been famous for a long, long time.
Yes.
Started by, I believe, I had his name written down, but it's not here anymore. I think Lindsay, I think his name was, back in 1870 or something. So very historic. But it's now headed by Beatrice Botswana Sita, originally from South Africa, from 2023 onwards, and is the UK arm of the Global Red Cross Network with statutory duties in emergency support and migrant aid. The next one is Refugee Action. Now, I want to show you this article in just a second. I just need to go back down onto this. Forgive me, I'm terrible with using
this. That's right. I can do the one on that side for you.
Cool. So Refugee Action is the next one, which is a charity assisting asylum seekers with integration and legal advice. So these ones have been named as well as being around the table between 2020 to 2024 with the Home Office. And the CEO is Tim Naor Hilton. And he had written this article, which I found. It's for The Big Issue. We all know it's a massive newspaper for, I believe, the homeless as well. It's a big charity for the homeless. But he wrote back in December 2024, the root causes of the UK's racist riots remain. The government must be brave and destroy them. This is his words. And
being destroyer, Tim.
I think he
talking about.
So I double checked. I believe he's talking about the root causes, which allegedly is in this article.
What, being annoyed that our women folk are being sexually assaulted? What, that, Tim?
Well, I agree. We do need to destroy those root causes. But you do that by not having those people in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Surely, Tim?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Gross.
Yes, indeed. And I believe that this is in reference to the Southport riots, because this was written in December 2024 and is talking about, I believe, the riots happening during that time just beforehand. So, yeah, the Axel Rudakabana case and why people were annoyed and angry because of that. Mm. So moving on. So the next one is called Asylum Matters, which is a type of advocacy project amplifying refugee/asylum voices. That's same consultation as well between the years 2020 to 2024. The director and CEO is Louise Calvi. And
I thought it was John Goodman.
And it's an advocacy focus group that lobbies for policy changes and coordinates regional campaigns on refugee rights as well. So that's another one. Okay, and I've got, there's plenty more. Like I said, there's 14 that have been, of course, part of this. The next one is the... Sorry, just back one. So the next one is the Scottish Refugee Council, which is a Scottish-based charity. Once again, the same years, 2020 to 2024, and same consultation. The CEO being Sabir Zazai, who was an Afghan-born refugee. And they work on housing, legal aid, and integration for asylum seekers in Scotland. Well,
come to our country, and that's how you thank us.
Looks like Martin Scorsese.
And the next one after that.
Sorry,
it's okay.
Go ahead.
It's okay. The next one is Refugee Council, which is a big historic, I believe, charity fund or trust as well. Not trust, sorry, a charity. That has been involved as well. Consultation once again, Same thing, same years, and it's the one of the UK's most prominent refugee organisations, dating back to the 1950s as well. The CEO is, of course, let's have a look. The CEO is Enver Solomon, with the chair being Rachel Orr. I believe that's right at the top as well. That's him there. So the next one we have is ASAP. Asylum Support Appeals Project, which is a legal charity for asylum support appeal hearings. And the director is Marion Francis Edge, according to Company House. And it's a legal-focused NGO offering support to destitute asylum seekers challenging Home Office decisions. So I'm noticing as well that there are lots of different types of charities, NGOs, organisations already, from people that give legal advice, as well as legal advice on like housing, obviously, because it's with the Home Office, but also rights and aid and lots of different types of strands.
All the different means to just keep them in the country.
Exactly. And what's interesting as well is there's no group that does maybe the opposite or has like an opposing opinion or an opposing one as well.
If we did have the policy where you were detained or held on remand until you were just deported, then there would be absolutely no need for a whole organisation to make sure you're not homeless. We wouldn't be homeless, you'd be held on remand, right?
Right.
So that would clear that up for a start, but anyway.
Yeah. The next one, nearly there, so is ASAP, which is Asylum Support Appeals Project. So once again, a legal charity for... Sorry, just going back up. The legal charity for asylum support appeal hearings.
Right.
So we're starting to see a bit of almost a bigger picture and a bigger context as to why it's becoming quite increasingly difficult for politicians who may be you know, trying to challenge the asylum system and the broken asylum system that we're told about as well.
So there's things in place for as soon as you get here, things in place to help you with your legal troubles, and then something in place to help you with your appeal should you fail first time round. Right, it's okay. They've got all the bases covered.
Indeed. So this next one, sorry, I think we just touched on that. The next one here is Freedom from Torture. So this was a type of medical and therapeutic support for torture survivors between the years 2020 to 2024, the CEO being Sonia Skeets, and it's a group that lobbies on behalf of torture survivors in asylum cases. But this same particular one, after doing a bit of digging, because they've been going around, like I said, like it says there, like over 40 years, they were lobbying against the Rwanda scheme, the one that the Tories set up. So they were really lobbying against that particular process. And it seems as though that, of course, failed completely.
Yes.
Well, it's because they've got human rights, a record of human rights abuses in Rwanda. Is that the case? I actually don't know.
I believe that there has been, over the years.
I'm doing it wrong. I was against the Rwanda scheme too. But for different reasons.
For different reasons, right.
Right.
It was always a one-in-one-out thing anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
We were just going to exchange... What, like Albanian asylum seekers for a Rwandan person?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't...
And pay them for the privilege.
So it was always a swizz. It was always misdirection at best.
Because there was a big... I think I remember the Rwandan scheme, there was a big push for different types of campaigns, both for and against. And everyone had all these different sorts of opinions and different sort of basis to why it would and why it wouldn't work from both the Tories and Labour. I believe, I need to double check this, but I believe Freedom from Torture, was part of stopping the Rwanda scheme, allegedly. And part of the lobbyist groups for that. But still, their tenure between... the Home Office and them is between 2020 and 2024. So it's not just Rwanda. It could be others as well, which I don't know yet. And the next one is Rainbow Migration, formerly the UK Lesbian and Gay Immigration Group. which is a type of charity helping LGBTQI plus people with asylum claims, same years, 2020 to 2024, and provides legal guidance and advocacy for LGBTQ plus migrants, including those fleeing persecution. And that is Leila Zadeh, of course, the CEO or executive director. The next one is the Helen Bamber Foundation, which is a charity, again, providing rehabilitation to survivors of trafficking and torture as well. They've had the same consultations, 2020 to 2024. The CEO is Alison Pickup, and they offer clinical and legal support for asylum seekers suffering extreme trauma. So like I said, I'm going through all these charities that the Home Office has given me and just giving just a broader context on who they are and what they do. Just a reminder. And the last one as well. There's a couple of more others. I'm so sorry. It's quite a lot, 14. Migrant Help is one, which is a direct support charity for asylum seekers. And they were actually, it wasn't just an NASF consultation. They're a delivery partner, what is called AIRE contract. Now, I have the actual... What's the term? The abbreviation of that and what that actually means, just up here. 2 seconds. So yeah, the National Asylum Stakeholder Forum, which is the NASF, and its Strategic Engagement Group, so SEG. So Migrant Help acted as a delivery partner for AIRE services, otherwise known as Advice on Individual Rights in Europe. So that's a specific type of strain as well. So that strays away from the original just consultation. They're actually providing more of a delivery service on help. So a bit more sort of coordination in that respect. I know it's quite a lot to take in. So I do apologise.
It's all just so perverted.
And okay, so that one...
You're right, it is, but just quickly to say, it is a bit perverse because... I think that's the right word because, you know, on the face of it, isn't that a wonderful, noble thing to try and help people that have been tortured, right? On the face of it.
Yeah.
But then the reality is you're flooding us with rapists, though, right? What a perverse thing to have subverted something as sort of, as good, even noble, as trying to help torture victims. Mm. To subvert that and make that into some sort of tool or part of a cog in the machine of making white people, natives, a minority in their own ancestral homeland. What a disgusting...
Well, and how many of these people are foreign as well? Because foreigners have obviously been let in, first generation, second generation.
Seems like quite a lot of them.
By our good graces, you know, given our... And rather than try and preserve the safe country that they've come to... Just exacerbating the problem, making it a more dangerous place than they first arrived.
Yeah.
So like I said, I'm going to just stick with obviously what's been given by the Home Office. I'm not going to, obviously, for this particular segment, I personally am not going to dive into anything, but, you know, so that's, you know, just going to, yeah. The next one is ILPA, which is the Immigration Law Practitioners Association. They're kind of like a legal professionals membership group that done, obviously, once again, consultation. Jonathan Griffin as well, and apparently they're currently looking for a new CEO as well, but he's part of a sustainability, company or some kind of thing there. It's not a charity, like I said, but a legal association that influences immigration policy through expert lobbying as well. So there's lots of different NGOs, charities, and even law firms almost that have, that the Home Office has provided that has explained what is going on in that respect. And the last one is one that isn't a surprise, but that's the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees as well. So the UN Refugee Agency has been heavily involved with, quote, strategic consultation and policy advisory role. So the UN has been advising in terms of policy with the Home Office. That's what I'm reading there. And having major strategic consultation. The UK representative is Vicky Tennant. and it's the official UN body responsible for monitoring the UK's compliance with international refugee law. So you can, if you would like, I've already made a video on this as well, but I'll provide the link for all of these particular organizations, and you can read through it yourself. Don't take my word for it. Like I said, these are all public-facing figures of each organization, and this is what the Home Office has given me. So I'm just repeating exactly what the Home Office has said. Feel free to go through the list yourself, just to double check, fact check, do what you got to do. But I believe it's in the public interest that people need to know what is going on, you know, the broader picture. You know, we always talk about things like the charities, and of course with Charlotte's particular post as well. So I think it's in the public interest for people to understand and know. So that's why I brought this information onto the Lotus Eaters today, and just to share. And that's it.
No, it's great work. It's sterling work. It's so good that haven't you been plagiarised? Haven't some other mainstream media just basically stolen your stuff?
But Absification here says Lewis and Charlotte have been screwed over by the legacy media. Plagiarism is all they have left since these institutions are lazy and slow and can't keep up. Their legitimacy is dying out. Yeah, they keep nicking your stuff.
Yeah, so bit of context on that. For those who don't know, because I have been shouting about it for the whole weekend, so I'm so sorry. Yeah, there's been two particular stories that I've broken. One was the asylum. It was the HC2 certificates that have been given to low income people of low income in the UK, and there was nearly a million of these certificates given to asylum seekers in particular across the nation, and I fought tooth and nail to try and get that information, and I did, and I posted it. And the NHS, of course, what they would do, they would take that information and they will post it on the NHS data log, as they would do if a new bit of information is drawn out. But they get rid of your personal details, which makes sense. So you can't see who looked into it. And even though I posted it, several days later, The Telegraph in particular, or a journalist from The Telegraph, took the story and said it was The Telegraph.
The Telegraph can reveal no.
And that was actually me.
So cool. It was brackets.
So sleazy.
Yeah, I know.
So sleazy.
Yeah, got no shame whatsoever.
Yeah. So there was that, and there was the incident of when I did the TV shows that had COVID messaging, nudge unit messaging, lots of different stuff, and I managed to get internal memos between the CEOs of all these big broadcasters, the BBC, Channel 4, all of these. I managed to draw that out, and they did the same thing.
Well, The Telegraph.
Yeah. A journalist from The Telegraph did that, yeah. Mm. And same with Charlotte as well. They've ripped off her stories as well and passed it. She even pitched it. I saw it. She even pitched the story to them about the asylum seekers that were receiving Valentine's cards from school. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
So she pitched it to The Telegraph and they were like, no thanks. They were like, and then
said, great work. And then was like, nah.
Scandalous.
That's
bad.
Cheeky.
More than cheeky.
Yeah, it's way more than cheeky.
So, and I want to clear up as well about this, because people have been asking me, well, why can't you sue? Can't you do this? Can't you do that? Because it's freedom of information and it goes out into the public domain, and it becomes very, very difficult. You could say intellectual property, you could go down all these routes. But unfortunately, like, it's not like America where you can just, you know, do that. I have no intention of doing something like that, because that's not me anyways. And people know.
Yeah, I was going to say, people even know.
No, and I'll be honest, I like The Telegraph. I like what they do. You know, there are some great journalists there, you know, Michael Murphy, Alison Pearson, you know, all of these people. So it's not in my interest to do that, but it is very, very, very annoying.
We must have had all of it. I've seen quite a few segments, even one or two of mine, that we do on Lotus Eaters, and then, like, a few days later, it's a bit on GB News.
Yeah, well,
that happens from time to time.
This is what happens.
Or just a talking point that someone, like, Carl or Harry or me or Josh will say something, and then it's suddenly a talking point amongst those. Because you, like you say, you don't own it. If you put it out there in the public domain or on Twitter, you then don't own it. So no. It's fair enough.
No, and it's data. It's government
but
data.
But it's a bit annoying that you get no credit or someone actively takes credit for it when it clearly wasn't them.
Exactly. You know, I'm not asking for... I'm just saying, you know, revealed by X, Y, and Z. I
mean, might be
it's
nice,
courteous.
Won't it? Yeah.
You know, because what happens is... A big outlet will take the story from I'm going to say it, lower class journalists, you know, that are like citizen. Yeah, I know. I'm talking about myself, right? You know, that
the artful dogs are of journalists.
Lower class is how they would probably see it. Yeah. You know, the people who do the research, who send 30 FOI requests every week, you know, and then what they will do, they will see it and go, okay, well, we can have that because, you know, it's in the public domain.
Yes.
I'm not asking for much. I'm moaning a lot. But
sorry. No. Just to say, Connor, I've seen your Rumble rant. I'll speak to the support team and have that addressed for you. Yes. Okay.
Anyway, sorry.
No, not at all. Let's go to the video comments.
I wonder what this is a clip from. What was...
Oh, I know what this is. I think I know what this is from.
It's like he's watching a massacre or something.
I thought that was going to be fun! What the hell?
It was a murder.
Oh. I was joking when I said he's watching a massacre.
That's actually Harry's face every time he gets another shitlib book through the post.
People send Harry loads of shitlib books for some reason.
Yeah. Oh, really? Oh, funny. Yeah, I've seen it's his quite book funny. Collection.
It's
it's so funny.
Loads of James O'Brien.
He's there going, oh, another one.
Just out of interest, because I didn't see that original bit of content with Harry and Josh there. What murder? What was it?
No idea.
I thought it was something else, but no. No.
Murder. Okay.
And here we are at the Mitsuo Marketplace Japanese Summer Festival. Otherwise known as the Matsuri.
What's going on?
And right here
is balls.
Takoyaki. Takoyaki is a Japanese delicacy. It is batter with a little bit of vegetable, a little bit of ginger, and a little bit of octopus. And they're really very good.
His balls.
Here we are.
Someone just litter. Yeah, sorry. Someone just litter, like commit a crime.
Carl's balls.
Just litters. Like.
Takoyaki is very, very nice. Yes, hope you bought some. Yep, Samson agrees, obviously. Any more video comments? Yep.
Now more traditional Japanese dancing.
It looks like a very fun day out, Michael.
Yes, he did grab my bum, but it's my fault he can see my hair, so I've just ordered a hijab on Amazon. We don't need borders, we need healing spaces. After a few yoga classes, they'll stop harassing young girls, I promise.
We've launched a community art project where local school children write apology letters to the migrants for being British.
I'm not even from here, but the Labour Party paid me £90.
Oh, is it?
It's AI. Oh my gosh, did you get conned by the AI?
Yeah, I thought
this was real. Oh my day, you thought that was real?
I thought all of these were real,
oh my days.
But the thing is, it's believable then. It's believable then.
We're entering the boomer phase of tech, where we're being... No, it's happened to me once. It's happened to me once, and I was like,
"I've been fooled by loads of stuff."
Yeah,
I've been fooled by loads of stuff.
Oh my god!
You see the one where they did? You could actually see a bullet hole open up in Trump's ear, in the Trump assassination.
Oh yeah.
I was fooled by that.
Right.
Oh.
I was like, "Whoa! You can actually see the whoa." Yeah.
Oh, I think I remember that. Yeah.
I think I said it on here as well. I was like, "Well, there's the footage."
Oh no! You're getting fooled by AI.
Yikes.
That's bad.
But the thing is. That's so good because it is believable, though. I bet there will be libtards that
it's like,
say exactly that sort of thing. Mm.
It's like...
There will be.
It's, yeah. It's
in fact, that last guy that said, we're getting school kids, primary school kids, to write letters of apology. I saw something that was pretty much exactly that. For real.
Well, if we've seen them writing were, Valentine's
yeah,
Day
the
cards.
Right.
That's not a million miles away, is it?
No, no, not at all. Let's, I'll just rumble through some of these comments and then we'll... Right, so Derek Power says, the Bow Hotel will be a fortress. It definitely would. The Bow Hotel has a nice ring to it.
Is that like a euphemism for some sort of like Cambodian death prison?
No, I just misspoke when I said the Bell Hotel.
Oh, right. Oh, okay. So, okay. All right.
Russian Garbage Human says, zero arrests at our protests because we aren't prescribed yet. Yeah, well, they'll find a reason, won't they? Mm. And from your segment, Bo, Pakistan, Eritrea, Albania, Somalia, Morocco, on and on, etc., all absent from the list of countries. They are essentially taking the crime league tables and talking about deporting the underachievers.
Right, yeah. Let's make sure we've got a deal in place with Luxembourg.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I'd like to visit there, actually, off topic. I would like to visit there.
David Ward says, Reform have announced mass deportations. Do you believe them? No. No, I don't, David. Not at all. And then from your segment, Lewis. Mm.
Real quick. The big, like, mass deportations of people that are criminals and stuff, but not, like, people
Not re-migration.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. David, from your segment, Lewis, says, Lewis's research is very valuable.
Thank you.
It's great getting the receipts.
Thank you.
Indeed, indeed. And White Rider says, this list, man, can we also start, well, there does seem to be a problem with the liberal white women, as White Rider points out on here. And... honourable mention, North FC Zuma says, day five of pestering Bo for a whistle-stop tour of British history for us state-educated Zoomers.
Oh, okay.
Is that something
fair enough?
Been pestered about?
Not that's particularly permeated my consciousness, but...
Well, consider yourself pestered.
Well, we're over epochs, over like 200-plus episodes now.
Yeah.
A big chunk of that is all on British history.
Yeah.
But it might be good. It is a good idea maybe if I did 1 hour, hour and a half long episode, which was exactly that, a whistle-stop tour, not real detail, just maybe going from Caesar to Queen Elizabeth II in an hour and a half. That's not a bad idea at all. Maybe I should do that. Should do that.
250 epochs. How much more whistle-stop do you want?
Yeah, come on.
See, I liked the when you used to go, like, you used to do the tours of, like, the museums and stuff, and you used to go around and... like a tour guide, but for the Lotus Eaters, revive that, man.
Yeah. Oh, I'd like to, yeah.
All right. Well, that's definitely all we've got time for today, ladies and gentlemen. Lewis, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
As always.
Thank you very much.
And we'll see you at 1 p.m. tomorrow. Have a good day.